This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome, everyone. Seems like we have a big crowd today. How many people, it's your first time coming to Jikoji? We've got about a little more than half. So we have new faces and old faces today. And I want to start by asking all of you to reflect on whether you've told a lie in the past 24 hours. And think about it. And if you have, please raise your hand. We've got one. So one, two, we have two.
I'm sure I have.
Okay, three, four. We have four brave and honest souls who owned up to a lie that they've told in the past 24 hours. Thank you. We'll unpack this a little bit later in the talk. But I want to first start by introducing myself. For those of you I haven't met, my name is Ke Ying. So it's pronounced kind of like Ke-ching, but with a Y, so Ke Ying. And I've been practicing meditation and been introduced to the study of Buddhism since 2016. And last year, I just completed a work-study program at Jikoji right here. And as I reflect upon my practice, and also my things that I've been reflecting on, one Buddhist teaching stood out to me particularly, and it relates to the fourth precept of Buddhism. Who here can tell me what the fourth precept of Buddhism is? Anyone?
Well, Chris, we can, but come on.
A guess? I already gave away. Huge hint.
Honesty.
Thank you.
Thank you. Don't tell lies. Honesty. Thank you both. So yes, the fourth precept of Buddhism teaches us to refrain from false or harmful speech. And it's also echoed in the Eightfold Path. One of them is the right speech. How do we speak compassionately and truthfully? So while I share about the subject of honesty with you today, I also want to give credit and acknowledge that some of the ideas from this talk are drawn from Dr. Anna Lamke's book, The Dopamine Nation. And Dr. Lamke is a medical director at the Stanford Addiction Center. And the specific ideas that inspired this talk are from specifically the chapters Radical Honesty and Pro-Social Shame. So let's go back to where we started. We had four people telling the crowd that they've lied in the past day. So let's start here. I want all of us to close our eyes and take a deep breath. Let's start by thinking about a lie that you've told in the past week, in the past month, the first month of January, or in 2024, or maybe a big lie that you've dwelled upon in your life. What was that? What is that? How about a small lie? How about a harmless white lie? And how about when you said, oh, it's delicious to your mom's lasagna dish last night, but you didn't really mean it? Or how about when you said, I'm fine, to your colleagues? What were you really feeling? The traffic was heavier than expected today. That's why I was late to Zazen. Or, I would never lie to you. How about those lies that hit our core a little bit more? Maybe it looks like intentionally omitting a part of a family history out of fear that that person sitting on the other side of the table simply won't understand. Or maybe it's about minimizing a drinking or drug use habit that you've recently developed or relapsed into. Or claiming credits at work when in fact the work was done by someone else from two desks down from you. Or promising to a partner that you've never been seeing someone outside of the monogamous relationship while you have been in one capacity or another. How do you feel in your body? Did your heart race? Did you feel your blood pulse through your cheeks, your palms, and through your fingertips? Are you physically smaller in this moment? Or are you propping yourself up? How do you feel? What emotions do you experience? Were you found out? Or did you realize you were so clever and successful at it that others believed you? Or did you have the experience where the first successful attempt led you down to a habit of lying, even for stuff that didn't really matter? Did you have to tell more lies to cover up for that previous lie? And how did you feel about the relationship with the person that you lied to afterward? How did you feel about yourself? And how do you feel about yourself right now? Now I invite you to all open your eyes and rejoin this room of liars that you're sitting next to. According to Dr. Lanky's research, an average adult lies about 0.6 to 1.6 lies a day. So that roughly gives about one lie per day. And it tells me that if there are 50 people in this room, then the other 46 may be lying to me. So yes, we are all joined by our own lies and lies that people sitting next to us are telling us. And research has shown that the bigger and the more detrimental the lies, the more the lies are related to when telling the truth would harm our self-image. This person right here. And there can be many different emotions that that drives us to tell a lie. We could lie out of survival, or due to a situation where it's unsafe. But we could also lie out of fear for punishment, rejection, and abandonment. It can be out of our own shame and guilt. And maybe it could be out of greed or desire. And sometimes even empathy or compassion. You want to make the other person feel good. So I want to ask all of you, do you think telling the truth, or telling lies rather, truly protect this self-image, ourself, and make our lives better? Think about it as I go through the talk today. So as I've mentioned before, that we all engage in regular lyings, and most of them probably small, trivial. And most of the time, we do it without realizing it. And that's probably why most of us didn't raise our hand when I asked that question. Our lies can be so small and imperceptible that we even convince ourselves that we're telling the truth. And children began lying at the age of 2. And the smarter the kid is, the more likely they're going to lie, and the more successful they are at it. And animals lies too. Velvet monkeys give out false alarms to warn off predators, to scare away their fellow velvet monkeys so that they can monopolize those food sources. And male cuttlefish mimic and pretend to be a female cuttlefish in order to avoid detection by other dominant male cuttlefish. So it is in our evolution that we lie, and there are reasons why we engage in this behavior. And as adult humans, we're so capable of even more sophisticated lies than animals and children. And words that are used to build up complex social systems can also be used for deception and misinformation. And the more advanced our language systems, the more elaborate our lives. And this reminds me of our practice called Rohatsu at the end of December, at the beginning of December last year. And for those of you who are new to meditation or silent retreats, Rohatsu is a retreat where we enter a noble silence for a period of 5 days. And that looks like no talking, no reading, no writing, no electronics, and even no direct eye gaze. So for those 5 days, there's a group of fellow meditators And we would begin the day by all sitting together, just like what we did this morning, but more of those throughout the day. And we would eat Orioki meals together, which is a type of ceremonial way of eating where you're serving the person who's sitting across from you. With all of this without words or communication through language. And we also do chores together, and we do it in sync with other people. We're sweeping the decks outside of the big zendo. And we do chores. We also sit together in the common room and drink our tea together, all in silence, without interaction. And then we would go to sleep under the same moon, wake up with the same bell, and then sit again. And during that session, I have felt like the space that we held collectively were more conducive to getting to know each other and building this intimate connection among this group of around 10 people than if we had let language represent ourselves. How weird. How counterintuitive that is. And somehow the deprivation of language, the honesty of our physical presence, still give away people's personalities, their quirks, their emotions, how they carry themselves, and their individuality. You really get to know everyone in the group. And in the meantime, no language did any of that work. And indeed, 60% of our communications are through body language, and 20% are through our tones, and only 20% are the actual words that we say. So this tells me that in order to give a great speech, I just have to sit upright and be cheerful and care less about what I say. but it is true. It is true. And so maybe think about the person when you're thinking about your lie, the person that you are lying to. Maybe you already gave out that memo away through your body language. And you just further confuse them with your words. And maybe that's where the disconnect kicks in. So lying does have its advantages if we're competing for scarce resources, like those velvet monkeys trying to, you know, have lunch. Or if you're a male cuttlefish trying to stay alive from the other more dominant cuttlefish. But lying in a world of plenty risks shame and isolation. Because We do live in a world of abundance, objectively speaking, and it is so easy for us to slip into the behavior that feels good in the short term. Perhaps you're doing worse about that than when you were a kid. And, you know, do actions that may be more detrimental to us in the long term. And telling the truth is probably one of them, and telling the truth can be painful. But telling the truth, large and small, about our daily lives is fundamental to a life well lived, a wholesome life. And there are three reasons. First, honesty promotes our own awareness of our own actions. Second, it fosters an intimate fabric of human connections. And last but not least, telling the truth promotes a world that feels plenty and promotes that plenty mindset for not only us, but people around us. So going to my first point, honesty promotes awareness of our actions. I'll tell you an example of myself. When I was hanging out with my good friend, Linda, I shared with her that I went on 3 dates with this one person instead of the reality, which is I went on 2 dates with them. That was an attempt for me to mask how quickly things have progressed in a short period of time in that 2 weeks. Well, I know that my friend thinks I should really be taking that time to self-care. And this is a convenient lie that seems to make my life easier, because at the moment I really wanted to avoid her judgment and, you know, not create any opportunity for scrutinization of my actions. But I have felt estranged from her throughout the rest of that interaction that night. It was a one-on-one hangout. And I have felt slightly estranged from myself too. Like I didn't really feel connected to myself. And while I was reading about the subject of radical honesty and practicing at Jikoji last year, I confessed to a teacher about how I was feeling, about, you know, my reflections on that feeling of alienation to myself. And I had described it like, I felt like, you know, this was me and this person was right next to me. And I have felt like this real me or the fake me was out of my body, like right next to me. And I feel this disconnect. And I confessed about, you know, that was after when I had lied in a situation where at the time I had felt like I needed to feel safe and secure. I needed that. And also the above lie that I've shared with you all. So I've shared all of that with this teacher. Well, you know, while those lies may have had very little impact, I don't know, may have had little impact on the people I was telling them to, I had realized after a long time that the real impact was about how I viewed myself, how I saw my self-worth, and the shame that comes with it. So this teacher has embraced me without judgment and with loving compassion. And this has allowed me to view myself in a more compassionate way later on and accept myself for who I am, for the person that does not need to, you know, tell that lie in order to feel safe or secure. And in that act, I accept myself for who I am, the one that does not, you know, need to create a false narrative of myself, this, so I can put this back into my body. Mm-hmm. And because this was a positive, experience talking to the teacher and talking to myself, I later confessed to Linda, my friend, that, about my reflection on honesty, and also how I had told her how I misrepresented the number of dates I was going on. And she chuckled and really appreciated me for, making this communication, sharing it with her. And for me, walking away from that interaction, I have felt lighter and felt more connection in our relationship, in our friendship. And I had felt like our relationship has become stronger. Not because of how many years we've been friends, but like this continued effort to communicate. And we can hold each other accountable. And she can continue to be my trusted confidant when I go on future dates. So truth telling does promote more self-awareness, getting you out of that state of perhaps it's denial, perhaps denial is really the state of like you're like half aware of your action, but you're also not aware at the same time. So that's the first point, which is truth telling promotes awareness of our own actions. Second point. Telling the truth fosters a more intimate human connections and creates more long-lasting and satisfying relationships. You've probably all had the experience when you're exposing your vulnerability and counterintuitively, instead of, the person leaning away, they're actually more drawn to your vulnerability, because what's happening is that they really see their own brokenness in your vulnerability, in this shared humanity, and they feel reassured that no matter what their weaknesses or their fear and worry is, that it's shared. It's a shared experience. And like the intimacy that we share in this truth telling promotes the production of, or like the release of a hormone, oxytocin, which I'm sure most of us are familiar. So this hormone is responsible for, romantic relationships, but also mother-child bonding and building trusting, long-lasting relationships. And truth-telling promotes the release of oxytocin. So for me, because I felt more accepted, more connected by being honest in the first step, I was able to recognize more of the emotions that I typically are hidden away from me, such as anger or disappointment. I never noticed them. It's really only sadness that when it emerged in my body. And so because of this honesty, I'm able to recognize those emotions, and I feel safe enough to have further conversations, to share these feelings, and to promote, further productive conversations. And that safety, it's reverberated, and it builds onto me, and I feel more and safer in this world to express those feelings and be honest with myself. So I wanted to share a quote that I really enjoy in this book by Dr. Lamke. Recounting our truthful experiences gives us mastery over them. So it could be through writing in the journal, going to therapy, talking to an AA sponsor, confess to a priest, confide in a friend, whatever that is. Our honest disclosure brings our behavior into relief and allows us, in some cases, to see it for the first time. And practicing honesty can strengthen dedicated neuron circuits in the same way if you're learning how to play the violin or if you're learning how to cook. So it is a practice, just like when we're sitting this morning and we come back to sitting. So that was the second point, which is truth-telling promotes long-term intimate relationships. And that leads to my third point, which is truth-telling can also engender a plenty mindset versus a scarcity mindset. How does that work? Most of us are probably familiar with the Stanford marshmallow experiment. Yes. So for those of you who are not familiar, the experiment is about, you know, it's an experiment on kids about delayed gratification. So kids were put in an empty room. Imagine, you know, you were put in an empty room. You were given one marshmallow and nothing else in the room. And the instruction is that you wait for 15 minutes, don't eat the marshmallow, and you get a second as your reward. So that is the reward for delayed gratification. And a few years ago in 2012, there's a group of researchers at the University of Rochester who cleverly changed this experiment learn about the power of keeping your promise. So the first group of children, the researchers promised, again, imagine you to be that child in the room. So the researcher promised you that they would come back after you ring a bell. So if you ring the bell, they would come back. And so when you ring the bell, they didn't come back. So that was before the same marshmallow experiment. And then the second group of kids are delivered the same promise where, you know, after you ring the bell, the researcher would come back, and they did. They fulfilled their promises. It's a very simple, negligible act to some, maybe, but they did fulfill their promise right before this marshmallow experiment. And of course, the kids don't know, you know, what's the design of the experiment. And what they had found is that the latter group, the kids who had a fulfilled promise rather than a broken promise, were willing to wait for that marshmallow up to four times more than children who were delivered a broken promise. So what does that tell us? So again, citing Dr. Lamke's research, she believes that truth-telling engenders a plenty mindset and lying engenders a scarcity mindset. So think about it, when people around us are reliable, when your parents are reliable, and they tell you the truth, including keeping your promises, whether you're a parent or you're the kid or both or the grandparent. When we deliver our promises, we feel more confident that the world we feel more confident about the world and our future in it. And this feeling is reverberated to how we view the world, not in that one-on-one interaction with this person who fulfilled your promise, but how your worldview is built up. That we can not only rely on this one person, but we feel that the world is predictable, that it is orderly, that it is a safe place for us to be in, and even amidst scarcity. we can feel confident that, yeah, things will eventually be okay. Things will eventually be okay. And this is plenty mindset. On the opposite side, if we all lie and we don't fulfill our promises, you know, to your cousin, to your daughter, we view the world as less reliable, even as the person who's maybe telling the lie. Less orderly, more dangerous. It's a dangerous place out there, and we're less confident about our future in it. You know, we enter that survival mindset. We became these velvet monkeys and those, you know, those male fishes and trying to dodge the next bullet. We maximize short-term gains in those situations and forego the long-term ones, independent of actual material wealth. And this is scarcity mindset. So just as it's possible to have a scarcity mindset amid plenty, it is also possible to have a plenty mindset amid scarcity. So where does that feeling of plenty come from? And it does come from, you know, beyond material wealth, beyond a certain level, and believing that working towards something that's greater than ourselves, and fostering those intimate connections with people and with communities, and building a life rich of meaning and love and connection. And that's where we feel the plenty mindset. So I view my practice time and all of our practice time together today at this moment at Jikoji as this exercise, as this, you know, art of connecting to the larger fabric of the generosity, the connectedness that we that's shared with us. And let us be touched and carry this mindset of plenty as we travel down the hill this afternoon to our other communities and even the strangers that we interact with today, or the driver that drives past us on the way down. And a single simple truth about our everyday lives are like little blocks of a chain that makes up our truthful, honest autobiography. So if we're all a book, then all of the words we say to ourselves and to each other is your autobiography. And I want to end by recapping what we had talked about today, which are 3 points. Number one is that truth-telling promotes self-awareness of our own actions and words, even if we think we know what we're doing or is aware, are aware. And secondly, truth-telling fosters intimate, long-term relationships, regardless of whatever the relationship looks like. And thirdly, it builds up a world of plenty for yourself and others. And you believe positively that, and securely, that there is a future, a promising and plentiful future for you in that world. And most importantly to me, the take-home message is that Honesty means respecting this little one that's inside us. The one that has its own foibles and flaws. The one who's really eager to go on dates to find love. And that one who's perpetually fashionably late. Or that one who's struggling to find connection with themselves. Or fill in the blank, whatever it is that is for you that you're turning away from and you're shunning. Who is that self when you're telling the lies? And invite that little one, this vulnerable, authentic, beautiful person who is valid, and they deserve to be acknowledged and seen and loved and cherished by you through your truthful speech. So when we choose to be honest, we're also choosing ourselves. Did you know that? And we're building a future that is reliable and promising. So I would argue that narrating a truthful autobiography through our daily lives and daily words and practices builds us and our world up in the long term. Questions?
As you mentioned, there are circumstances where when you are kind of ruthlessly honest with someone, that you can actually harm them, harm the situation. So given you have the intelligence or the broad view, they can see there's your truth about what you feel about that person, but in conveying that truth to that person, you could genuinely harm that person or maybe even harm more than the person, kind of harm the relationship or harm the harmony around that person. So the question comes up, if you're going to be sort of strictly honest with your view, do you balance that honesty of your with yourself with the awareness of the effect that truth telling will have?
Thank you, Shoho, for the question. So the question was, if you're going with the guideline of being radically honest from a point of view of our own truth, then in the instances where we're humming, where we think we may harm the other person by telling the truth, how do we hold the balance? So fun fact is that I've actually given another speech in college that's about, that argues telling white lies, benevolent lies, are justified. So I love what you brought up, Shoho, which is there are truth in many facades. There's my truth, and there's your truth, and there's your truth. And our truth may look like different universe, even we're experiencing this moment together. feels like there should be an objective truth, but we do hold our own truth however we perceive it. And because of that, I feel like, you know, in the cases that you mentioned where you have concerns of harming another person, and that could be, in my mind, two ways. One is this person may not be ready for what you are about to share, or maybe that, you know, that self, the sharing self, is taking too much space, that you want to allow more truth, or opportunity to express the other person's truth. And there could be those circumstances, and there could also be circumstances which are, in my previous speech, I had talked about how my family, and this very common Asian families, where we deceived my grandpa that he had cancer on his lung, a very mild, slow progressing one that we just thought at his age, he's almost 90, that he doesn't need to know that. So we hid that. But in a, you know, Western individualistic society, we may feel like, oh, you know, like the family is taking away this person's right to know something about their body, but maybe they just live happily in that line, you know. And my grandpa, after, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years of that diagnosed, no one did anything about it, and he's still happy and very demented, but that's another story. So I would say depend on the situation, and I think the case I'm arguing for, the truth autobiography for today, specifically are about those truths, that those lies that harms ourselves, that the lies we're telling about ourselves, what those are, and case dependent. Then, you know, if you're trying to help others, then obviously you'll gauge where they are and how your words may land, or, you know, with them, and if it's helpful. So thank you for the question.
Isn't that a circle logic here? I'm hearing that you say it's basically first. I'm glad that you acknowledge that there's no universal truth, and that truth is diverse across the sides.
Yes.
And you also say that, well, if truth is diverse and then there's no universal truth, and then even if there is, it might highly possible not be explained by language, then what exactly is lying? And then you're saying that your first point is lying helps benefit us. And then, but then you also say that your topic is about specific a lot of lies that harms ourselves. But isn't this totally a circular logic that we should avoid telling the lies which is harmful for us, which is basically saying that the definition of lies and definition of truth all comes from me, and I should avoid harming myself, which by itself I feel can be very little meaning, right?
Mm. Thank you for the question. So the question was about how I had argued about truth telling in a somewhat circular logic, where, you know, part of it I'm arguing for truth telling, which, you know, is less harmful for ourselves, and part of it in my Q&A that truth telling can also benefit, you know, in some situations.
One thing is that you're arguing truth-telling is benefiting for ourselves, but on the other hand, that you define this truth-telling as the things that are benefiting ourselves in your second, like, you know, previous question and answer. And I'm saying that that's basically a circle of logic, because by that definition, the truth that you define is the truth that benefits yourself. And you're telling the truth that benefits yourself can only benefit yourself.
Yeah. So maybe I can clarify. If I did, maybe I spoke. I don't know if I define what telling a lie or truth telling is. Maybe in my argument, yes, like truth telling can have purposes where it serves us. But I guess, like, if I don't know if I understand your question completely, but I think what I view as a lie is a harmful speech or false speech, and that's the definition. And I think truth telling doesn't necessarily always benefit us. And if you're looking in that lens, there's also the possibility of telling too many truth where it's like, and it's, you're overindulging truth telling, where, you know, you're spilling all of your feelings and all your truth onto the table. And in those cases, you know, you may be inviting for sympathy, empathy, or you may be getting something out of the other person, and that could, you know, cross the line into manipulative. So I think a teaching that I've heard and I've held true is, you know, like when you're thinking about something like honesty, you're holding it loosely in your hand. So you're not you're not overindulging in that act. There's possibility for us all to, you know, like tell the truth in order to invite other people to disclose. And that may not be a genuine act in and of that interaction itself. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that's not answering my question.
Oh, okay.
I still see the contradictory here. I will say that the whole topic of the appeasement is about like why we should tell less lies and be more sure of ourselves. And then in the closing section, you also mentioned that your definition of a lie is those things that are harmful for ourselves, which means the whole punishment you did is about we should not do the things that harm ourselves, which I feel...
So the thing that harm ourselves is when we're deceiving who we are to ourselves, if that makes sense. I don't know if it makes sense to other people where
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Could you repeat what that last sentence you just said?
Okay. Challenging my memory. Yes. So I think what I believe and what I got out of this exercise of, you know, writing this speech is that, yes, like it creates all of these positive things. And in the end, you want to be truthful and honest to the self. Like if I create a false self and say this perfect queen that, you know, like lives a perfect balanced life and don't indulge herself in XYZ act is the self that I accept and I love, the perfect self, then I'm rejecting the self that is imperfect, that stayed up late, that indulged in TV shows, that went on, you know, told the lie about how many dates she went on. So it's in that act of truth telling to myself, I'm truthful to myself, that I am extending a compassionate and forgiving and safe place for myself. That is the argument.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
That was the answer.
So maybe one last quick question and we can definitely talk more and extend this over lunch. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. What came up for me on your question was two corollary questions. Is, you know, one, can we really know if our truth that we're considering sharing is going to really hurt or benefit? Sometimes we can't always know. Am I projecting what they need to hear? Can I really know what they need to hear or not hear? And the second question I think is really worth contemplating is responsibility. Is it my responsibility to to make a decision whether to share this truth? It's my responsibility not to hurt them. Not that I ever want to hurt them. I do feel responsibility not to hurt anyone, but those two go together in a very unique way. Because the first one's like, do I know that's going to hurt? Maybe that'll benefit them. Maybe it'll hurt them terribly. But maybe it'll benefit them. And I don't think it's my responsibility for
that. Or even if it helps them. You have a responsibility to let them find it out for themselves.
Right?
That's it.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of, you know, feed them the answer.
Right.
Thank you for answering the questions for me. There.
And I don't think it was really a question for you or anyone else. It's just, it's a worthwhile question for a woman.
Thank you for answering the second question. I'll have a one-liner for the first question, which is, how do you know, the question was, what was the question?
How can one know if it's going to be harmful or not?
How can one know if the other, how the other person's going to receive it? And when I hear that question, I may be projecting, but I'm hearing a little bit of fear, a little bit of insecurity. How does, you know, my lie, or maybe it's not necessarily your lie, it's a lie that, you know, a group has constructed, whatever. There's fear of how that will impact our relationship, how I will be received, how will I be abandoned because of that. So I would encourage you to look at that and also recognize that emotion that's driving that question. And also, once you maybe have an answer or feel comfortable, gauge the other person, where they are in their body. Are they in their body? Are they confident? You know, are they in touch? Are they in touch with you? Listen to them, and you will have an answer of if it's the right moment or if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Share
that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One of the beauties of sutras, I think, is it's not like the speech that we've been using, which is it and can be extremely succinct. And what you're talking about, I recall, is the five remembrances, and at the end of the last is my actions are my only true belongings. Where it's everything, what is not an action, I cannot escape from the consequence of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.